Well, good morning, everybody. I'd like to welcome you all to Washington, D.C., for those who had to travel in. I hope your trips in were fine, and accommodations were good for those who were here last night, so thank you all for being here. I'm Marty Bauman. I'm the Chief Auditor and Director of Professional Standards for the PCAOB, and I'd like to officially call to order this meeting of the Standing Advisory Group. We're looking forward to 2 days of very interesting and enthusiastic dialogue and informative and information from all of you regarding the matters that we've sent out in advance. We appreciate the participation of all of those SAG members and observers who are here. We also appreciate the attendance of all the other people who are here in the room, and also those who are listening in on our webcast. Before I go any further, however, I'd like to turn the meeting over to our acting chairman of the PCAOB, Dan Gelzer, for a few comments. Dan.
Thanks very much, Marty. I'd like to join in welcoming everyone to the fall 2009 meeting of the PCAOB's Standing Advisory Group. As I think everyone in the room knows, the SAG is one of the key vehicles that the board uses to gain input and insight into how we should be directing our activities in setting auditing standards for public companies. We always learn a tremendous amount at these meetings. At least I certainly always learn a tremendous amount. And I want to thank all of you for being willing to serve on the Standing Advisory Group and for taking the time to be here today. I should also note at the outset that this is Marty Bauman's first meeting as chair of the SAG. Marty became Chief Auditor and Director of Professional Standards in April 2009, just shortly after the last SAG meeting. Marty is, however, certainly not new to the PCAOB or to our standard-setting program. As I think many of you know, before becoming Chief Auditor, he served for 3 years as Director of our Office of Research and Analysis. He led ORA in identifying and evaluating emerging audit and accounting issues and other challenges, and directing the focus of the board's inspections, enforcement, and standard-setting programs to address those matters. The move to heading the standards program was the next logical step. One of the things that I hope will become clear at this meeting is that we're embarking on a new phase in our standard-setting. We have a very ambitious standard-setting agenda planned for the coming year, and Marty is going to review the agenda with you this morning. I think his presentation will make clear that we're focusing on some of what I would call nuts and bolts auditing issues, and particularly on issues that our inspection program has highlighted as areas where standards can be improved or modernized. The issues that the advisory group is going to be discussing today and tomorrow, auditing fair value measurements, audit committee communications, related party transaction auditing challenges. These all illustrate, I think, this renewed focus. Our ongoing projects on confirmations, which the SAG discussed at its last meeting, and our risk assessment standard setting proposal fall into the same category. While the standard setting program has always been a busy one, the coming months are likely to see more activity with more potential impact on financial statement auditing than any similar period in the board's existence. Before I turn the floor back to Marty, I just want to emphasize how much we value the role of the SAG, the role it plays in our standard setting. I did a kind of a back-of-the-envelope computation last night, and if my recollection is correct, this is the 17th SAG meeting that we've had since the inaugural meeting in June of 2004. Since that time, or in those 17 meetings, SAG has certainly discussed a wide range of topics. Not all have resulted in standard-setting projects, at least not yet, and perhaps it's not always clear to the members of the SAG how their deliberations fit into the board's program. With that in mind, Marty reached out to the SAG members and asked for their suggestions and comments on how we can best use this high-powered group. In his remarks, I think he's going to touch on some of the feedback that he received. We've also prepared a chart showing the current status of the standard-setting topics previously discussed by the SAG over the last 6.5 years. We're making that available this morning, and I think you'll find that of interest. So I hope each of you will feel free to let Marty or me or any of the other board members or staff know if you have additional ideas about what the role of the SAG should be and how we can best use your input and ideas. And with that, I just want to thank everyone again for taking the time to be here with us for the next 2 days, and I'll turn the floor back to Marty.
Thank you very much, Stan. The first thing I'd like to do is to briefly go over the agenda for the meeting for the next 2 days. Copies of the agenda should be on top of the folders that were in front of each SAG member and observer. For anybody else here in the room, all of the handouts, the agenda, and all the other handouts for today's meeting were at the front table, so hopefully you received them. If you didn't, they're available to you. And I should point out that for those listening in, the agenda and items included in the folders have also been posted to our website. During the first part of this meeting today, really over the next hour, I'll discuss our standard-setting activities. As part of this discussion, I'm going to cover really four items. First thing is, briefly, as Dan mentioned, a summary of comments about the SAG or standard setting that I received from SAG members and observers based upon my request for such information when I was appointed chief auditor. So I reached out to you and asked for input and comments on standard setting and operation of the SAG, and many of you responded. The second item I'll cover is a summary of the standard setting activities that we've accomplished over the past year from October 2008 through today. Third, I'll go over the current standard setting agenda, and I think you'll see that document looks a bit different than anything we've put in front of you before. It's pretty descriptive in terms of what we intend to do and with respect to the time frame over which we intend to do those things, and we'll go through that. And the last item I'll cover during this hour is a review of the standard setting topics previously presented by the PCOB at the SAG meetings and the current status of those matters. So those are the main items I'll be covering during this first hour. During this presentation, I'd ask you to make careful notes about your points, your comments, and questions. As you'll see on the agenda, after the break, there's a little more than an hour for discussion of standard-setting activities and emerging issues. Your discussion of our standard-setting activities and emerging issues will go from about 10:45 through the lunch break. Although we've set aside this time for comment and discussion, I also want to make sure that anybody who feels they want to make a comment during this presentation feels like you can make a comment then as well. So we have set aside a lot of time for discussion about these, what we consider very important matters. This is our standard setting agenda, the main issues we're dealing with, and we do want to make sure that we get input, and very good input, as part of this discussion today. Getting back to the agenda, in the first hour after lunch, we'll give you an update on comments we have received on recently proposed standards and concept releases. They are the proposed standards on risk assessment, the concept release pertaining to confirmations, and the concept release pertaining to signing of the audit report by the engagement partner. So we'll give you an overview of comments that we've received on each of these. The comment periods are closed, but we will be interested in receiving any additional input that you might have on these proposals and concept releases. The rest of the afternoon, as you can see on the agenda, will be devoted to a standard-setting project we have underway regarding fair value measurements and the use of specialists. Greg Fletcher, an associate chief auditor in our office, will introduce the topic, and then we'll all move to breakout groups for in-depth discussions. These breakout sessions will not be open to the public, and I believe everybody should have received an indication of which breakout group you're in. Tomorrow morning we start back here again at 8:30, and we will give a summary of the highlights of the breakout sessions regarding fair value measurement and use of specialists. And once again, we'll put together all the discussion points that we received from the various groups, highlighting key themes, and each of you will have, again, a chance to comment on the summary points that we make with respect to fair value and use of specialists. Obviously, this has been a critical topic from the accounting standard setter's point of view, and we're very interested in any input we receive with respect to the auditing standard setting project we have underway here. After that tomorrow, we will go over two other current standard setting projects, communications with audit committees and related parties. Those discussions will be led by Barbara Vanich and Brian Degano, Associate Chief Auditors. In addition to that, I should point out that joining me at the front of the table here are, to my immediate left, Jennifer Rand, Deputy Chief Auditor, Greg Skates, to her left, Deputy Chief Auditor, and Bella Rifshin, to my right, Associate Chief Auditor. Jennifer, Greg, and Bella will all play a key part in the discussions with me over the next 2 days. If anybody has any comments or questions about our agenda, I'll be pleased to take them now. Just as a reminder, if anybody wants to make a comment, our protocol is please just stand your name card or tent card vertically like this, and we'll call on you. A couple of people couldn't make the SAG meeting, and they're on the phone. That's Shelley Stein, Hal Schroeder, and Barbara Roper. So Shelley, Hal, and Barbara, just please state that you have a comment. We'll make note of that, and we'll put you in the queue to call on you. With that, if there are no questions at this point, let me turn to the first item on the standard setting agenda. The first item I'll discuss, and for which there is no handout if you're looking for it, is feedback received on SAG operations and standard setting. On May 1st, I sent an email message to all SAG members and observers seeking feedback regarding your views on the effectiveness of SAG meetings and on our standard setting more broadly. I received written or oral feedback from about one-third of the SAG members, and thank you very much for that input. I'm glad to note that I did hear some very positive feedback. I heard that the SAG members, SAG meetings were very well run and well organized, that the discussions were of a very high quality, and that we were bringing important matters before the SAG for your discussion. So we're glad to hear that positive feedback. But not surprisingly, from this group, we also heard about some opportunities for improvement where we could pay attention. And let me discuss those opportunities for improvement right now. The first one was a need for greater continuity on matters discussed. Or, for example, a question that I quote, what has the PCAOB decided to do regarding that important matter that we discussed at the last meeting? So there was some feeling that very good discussion took place, a lot of input given, but what has happened to that discussion that we just had? Where are you going with it? Well, hopefully we'll begin addressing that point immediately. One of my topics this morning and in your folder is a listing of all previously discussed standard setting matters with the SAG, together with the current status of each of those matters. And at future meetings, we'll plan to do the same thing, and that is go over what matters did we discuss again in the past or recently, and what is the status of that discussion, and what are we doing with that from a standard setting perspective. The second item that we heard was the need for improved dialogue at the SAG meetings, including with PCAOB representatives. some SAG members felt that the PCAOB members' representatives needed to be more engaged in particular discussions, and we'll endeavor to do that. I will say that with respect to that comment, obviously, we look to the SAG as this group giving us input and for us to do, to listen to you and to make sure that we're getting your comments, hearing your comments, and reacting to them appropriately as we set standards. So to the extent that we weren't engaged, it's not because the lack of desire to be engaged in dialogue, but more a desire to be hearing from you. But having said that, we understand that from time to time it's important for us to make sure that we participate in that dialogue and join in and get our points across. Others also felt, and this I think is an interesting point, that at times their points got lost because of the manner in which we basically called on, well, people based upon which tent card went up in a consecutive order. And that often has the effect of chilling a point that may have been made because the next person, maybe when they put their tent card up, had a totally different thought in mind. And so, therefore, the dialogue didn't have any continuity to it. I'll try to work on that a little bit. If a key point is made, I may not go to the next card and ask that person to comment, but say, does anybody who has a card up want to continue and follow up on that point so that we can improve the dialogue on points that are being raised from all of you? The third comment that was made about SAG operations dealt with breakout groups. And breakout groups and breakout groups, and I heard it a number of times. And the point was that very good dialogue took place in this room, but you all felt that we did have a breakout session about a year ago on a topic, and you thought that was a very good way to get into smaller groups and have good dialogue. And again, on the theme of improving the dialogue, the breakout groups seemed to work very well. So we've taken that recommendation again to heart, and we will continue with breakout groups in the future. And you'll note that today, as I mentioned, with respect to auditing fair values, after some opening discussion here, we'll move into a breakout discussions for about 2 hours, where we'll have the opportunity for some in-depth discussion about the matters raised with respect to fair value measurements and use of specialists, but in that setting, the opportunity to potentially dig into other issues that you may have with respect to that subject. The fourth item I heard in the comments was the pace of standard setting is too slow. And I think I've heard that comment once or twice at a SAG meeting. Certainly one huge item impacting the timing of standard setting was reporting on internal controls. And that took up a great amount of the time with respect to the last couple of years and the standard setting agenda. But that said, however, I hope that when I review the current standard setting agenda and timetable that's in your folders, you'll find it to be appropriate and ambitious, and we've set out dates as to when we expect to get things done, and hopefully you'll find it to be something for which we can be accountable in the future on delivering on those goals. And the final item was to improve standard setting transparency and seek input from the profession and other constituencies earlier in the process. We're trying to do this, and we've had a number of meetings on some standard setting matters with the profession and with others, with academics in some cases and preparers. I'll be particularly interested in any comments on this point from the profession. We've also provided a significant amount of information regarding our standard setting priorities in the materials distributed today. And finally, I believe the use of the concept release, where appropriate, can also add to transparency. So I asked you how we were doing in my email some months ago. Many of you responded, and hopefully our actions today and in the future will help to make your experiences as a SAG member even more rewarding to you, and even more importantly, more valuable to us in our standard setting process. If anybody else has a comment with respect to SAG operations or standard setting matters in general, please feel free to make it now. Well, once again, I'll remind you that please make a note regarding any comments or questions you have, as we'll open up in the next hour for detailed discussions on all these matters. So let's now turn to the second standard-setting topic, a brief review of our standard-setting activities during the past 12 months. Each of you have a folder in front of you. I was going to say red, but I'm not sure. What color is this folder?
Burgundy,
thank you. Each of you have a folder in front of you, and on the left-hand side of that folder, we've got a number of items for this morning's session. The first item on the left should be a piece of paper that says PCAOB Standard Setting Activities, October 2008 to 2009. I hope you'll agree that we've addressed some very important matters over the past year. The first item to discuss is auditing standard number 7 on engagement quality review, which was approved by the board in July. We believe this standard has the potential for significant improvement in audit quality. Many engagements did not previously require an EQR, and this standard will now require EQRs for all audits and all interim reviews. In addition, the requirements in AS7 should provide for more effective EQRs even where they were performed in the past. The qualifications for the reviewer, the required review procedures, and the documentation for the review have all been improved. We intend the standard to be effective for all audits or interim reviews for periods beginning after December 15, 2009. Importantly, this standard is still pending SEC approval, which we hope will be forthcoming in the near term. Let me make one final comment on AS7, which has broader application. We often hear a concern expressed about the implications of multiple audit standard setters. In AS7, we carefully consider the requirements of other standard setters with respect to concurring partner reviews or EQRs, and we included an appendix in the release explaining where, and most importantly, why our standard differed from the EQR standard of other standard setters. We're committed to having differences in our standards only when we think it's necessary, and then explaining in the standards exactly why we're different from what the other standards set out, and making it clear in the appendix where we are different from those other standard setters. So let me move on to the second item with respect to the past year, and that's the risk assessment standards. 7 risk assessment standards were proposed nearly a year ago. We've addressed the comments received, and our goal is to repropose these standards in December. We think reproposal is the right thing to do because of the foundational nature of these standards. These standards address risk assessment for all stages of the audit and provide a strong foundation for current auditing standards as well as for all future standard-setting projects. So given their importance, we want to make sure that we get these right, and therefore we're going to repropose them a second time. These are significant standards, and they address core concepts underlying the audit, such as audit planning and supervision, identifying and assessing risks of material misstatement, the auditor's responses to risk of material misstatement, evaluating audit results, consideration of materiality in planning and performing an audit, and audit evidence. As I said earlier, future auditing standards will build on the fundamental principles in these risk assessment standards. We also believe these risk assessment standards will result in improvements to auditing in several ways. Among other things, they will update the existing requirements to take into account improved risk-based audit methodologies currently in use in many audits. They'll enhance the integration of the audit of financial statements with the audit of internal control over financial reporting, and they'll better embed the assessment of fraud risk into the audit, and not as a separate item, but again, embedded right into the audit procedures. In addition, the proposed standards reflect an effort to reduce unnecessary differences, again, with risk assessment standards of other standard setters. Two concept releases were issued this year, one regarding audit confirmations and the other potentially requiring the engagement partner to sign the audit report. The concept release on audit confirmations was issued a couple of weeks after the April 1st SAG meeting, and it incorporated views expressed by SAG members. The concept release addressed, among other things, the auditor's use of confirmations, including whether the requirement to confirm accounts receivable should be expanded to other items, advances in technology, including the internet and email, and the effect of disclaimers and other restrictive language on the reliability of confirmation responses. The concept release on requiring the engagement partner to sign the audit report was issued on July 28, 2009, and addressed whether the board should require the auditor with final responsibility for the audit to sign the audit report in addition to the current requirement for the firm's signature. The SAG discussed this topic in October 2008 after the U.S. Department of Treasury Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession issued their final report, which included the signing of the engagement report as a recommendation. The comment period has closed with respect to the risk assessment standards and both of the concept releases. But as I mentioned earlier, right after lunch, we will present a summary of the comments we received, and you'll have a further opportunity to give some input with respect to those standard-setting matters. Practice alerts 3 and 4 were also issued in the past 12 months. The matters covered in practice alert 3, audit considerations in the current economic environment, seem as relevant for audits and reviews now as they were during the past year. The matters raised in that alert pointed to a significantly elevated environment of audit risk in today's economy. The matters covered in Practice Alert 4 were directed at the audit implications of the FASB's FSPs on measuring fair value in inactive markets and on measuring impairments. In September, we issued a series of questions and answers as a reminder that auditors should look to the FASB codification and the rules of the SEC for authoritative U.S. GAAP guidance for SEC registrants. Even though PCAOB standards may contain descriptions of and references to U.S. GAAP, this Q&A also gives guidance to auditors regarding correction of an error or an accounting change when application of the codification results in different accounting treatment than previously reported. The FASB has indicated that they didn't intend to make any changes as part of the codification, but nevertheless, in pulling together all the various bits of accounting guidance, it was possible that when somebody looked at the codification, they could determine that it resulted in either something new that came to their attention, which could be that something was missed and it could be an accounting error, or potentially that the way it was pulled together indicated a possible accounting change. FASB's indicated that those items should be discussed with them, but depending upon the outcome, they could result in change, an accounting change or accounting error, both of which have different reporting implications. Finally, in this past year, we issued staff views on audits of internal control over financial reporting for smaller companies. This guidance, staff guidance, is intended to help auditors apply the provisions of AS5 to the audits of internal controls for smaller, less complex public companies. With respect to Section 404B of Sarbanes-Oxley, the SEC has recently announced that auditors will have to attest to management's assessments of internal control over financial reporting for non-accelerated filers for periods ending after June 15, 2010. As such, this guidance should be hopefully receive significant attention going forward. Well, that completes a high-level walkthrough of our standard setting over the past year. And let me again pause to see if anybody has any comments or questions with respect to that activity. Okay. If not, then the next item we're going to turn to is the current standard setting agenda, which is a 10-page document, again, in your folders. We had a busy year in standard setting, and we have a significant amount of additional guidance in development, as you'll see on our current standard setting agenda. The standard setting agenda includes key milestones, proposed issuance dates of concept releases or proposed standards, and proposed adoption dates. In most cases, you'll see that there's a possibility for a reproposal period, but that will depend, of course, on comments received. The timetable is also contingent on the board determining during each phase that the staff should continue to pursue a standard-setting project in each of these areas. Finally, emerging issues, new accounting developments, or legislative initiatives could impact the projected milestones or could result in other priorities not currently on the agenda. So let's move to the first item on the agenda, the risk assessment standards. I've mentioned these already. The staff is presenting proposed revisions to the board, and it's our goal to repropose these standards in December and to adopt them as final standards in the third quarter of 2010, effective for 2011 audits. With respect to audit confirmations, the staff has analyzed the comments that we've received, and we believe those comments support moving ahead with this standard-setting project. We expect to propose a standard in the first quarter of 2010 and to adopt a final standard in the third quarter of 2010. The comment period just ended on the concept release pertaining to engagement partner signing the audit report in his or her name, and the staff is in the process of analyzing those comments, and we'll be working with the board to determine whether to proceed with a proposed standard in this area. Moving on to the next page. A release is being considered for issuance this quarter with respect to the application of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act's provision on failure to supervise. The staff is currently preparing a draft release for the board's consideration relating to the board's application of Section 105(c)(6) of the Act, which authorizes the board to impose sanctions on firms and individuals for failure to supervise. The release would also seek comment on concepts relating to what, if any, rulemaking or standard setting might usefully supplement the board's application of that provision. For the next three standard setting projects on the agenda, items 5, 6, and 7, these projects, we're seeking your input at this SAG meeting. These projects pertain to fair value measurements, including the use of specialists, communications with audit committees, and related parties. Briefing papers were prepared for you in connection with each of these standard-setting projects. Assuming we move ahead with these projects, we're targeting proposed standards being issued in the first and second quarters of 2010. And let me comment very briefly on each of the three. A revised standard on fair value measurements could address, among other things, observations from the inspection's findings that some auditors are lacking professional skepticism in auditing complex fair value measurements. And secondly, could address audit responsibilities pertaining to FASB's increasing qualitative disclosures surrounding complex fair value measures. Regarding the use of specialists, the current standard makes no distinction between a specialist hired by management or a specialist engaged by the auditor. We believe these matters should be addressed and other matters as part of a standard on the use of specialists. A proposed standard on communications with audit committees could be enhanced to provide greater information about the audit. This is another area where we think audit quality could be enhanced with an improved standard. In particular, we believe that that standard could be enhanced to require more information regarding management's judgments and estimates in the financial statements and the auditor's view regarding the quality of disclosures in the footnotes to the financial statements. Regarding related parties, a revision to existing standards could address, among other things, whether certain related party transactions should be presumed to represent fraud risks, the auditor's responsibility with respect to transactions with management, including compensation, and other relationships, such as transactions with former executive officers of a company that might pose risks similar to related party transactions. Research shows that financial relationships with related parties are often a factor in corporate financial reporting scandals. Another standard on our agenda pertains to global quality controls. That standard principally deals with audit firms operating in affiliated networks. Among other things, this project will address existing requirements in Appendix K of the SEC practice section that the PCAOB adopted as part of our interim standards. Matters in Appendix K include reviews of U.S. filings audited by foreign affiliates and global inspection procedures. The staff is currently analyzing issues associated with this project. If the board decides that the staff should proceed with this project, we're targeting the second quarter of 2010 for the board to issue a concept release or a proposed standard on this item. Somewhat related, the next item is another standard-setting project which deals with part of an audit performed by other independent auditors. The current audit standard at section AU 543 addresses considerations by the auditor in determining whether he or she is the principal auditor, and then whether he or she should make reference to the audit of another auditor who performed part of the audit. We have noticed numerous issues through our inspections process with respect to the decision to be principal auditor, and therefore we believe we should address this matter in a proposed revised standard. Also, we believe that the principal auditor may need to know quite a bit more about the other auditors that he or she is relying on, including reliance by the auditor on affiliated firms who have performed part of the audit. We'll be discussing this matter with the board in the first quarter of 2010. Next, under AU Section 341, the auditor has an obligation to evaluate whether there is reasonable doubt about an entity's ability to continue as a going concern for a reasonable period of time not to exceed 1 year from the date of the financial statements. The FASB has a project on its agenda regarding going concern, and based upon the outcome of that project, we may need to make changes to our auditing standard. Two of the major areas being discussed at FASB are the period to be assessed, that is 1 year or longer than 1 year, and the interpretation of the term substantial doubt. So based upon FASB actions, we may make an amendment to our standard. If FASB doesn't take actions, we'll continue to look to see if there is a need to address this item. Similarly, with respect to subsequent events, we're evaluating the FASB's new accounting standard on subsequent events and analyzing how it may affect the board's related auditing standard and how it could affect audit reports. The final item on our current agenda pertains to other quality control requirements that were adopted from the AICPA SEC practice section as part of the board's interim standards and are requirements for only those firms that were part of the SEC practice section at the time. We are analyzing different options, including extending these requirements to all firms. Requirements in these standards are varied and include independence quality controls, continuing professional education, notification to the SEC of resignations or dismissals from audit engagements of SEC registrants, and certain other matters. We plan to address these items in the first half of 2010. This project excludes Appendix E, which was superseded by AS7, and excludes Appendix K, which I mentioned is part of another standard-setting project. That covers our standard-setting agenda. Certain other matters pertaining to SEC proposals pertaining to broker-dealers and investment advisors, certain other recommendations of the Treasury Advisory Committee on the audit profession, and certain recommendations of the SEC's Committee on Improvements in Financial Reporting are not on the standard-setting agenda, but could move on to it or could become priorities. And finally, other legislative developments, accounting developments, or emerging issues could impact our standard-setting priorities. So let me pause for a moment and see if anybody has any comments at this right now with respect to our standard-setting agenda that we've laid out before you, and hopefully in sufficient detail to give you a picture of what we're doing and over what time frame. Galen Hansen.
I'll go first. Thank you, Marty, for that was very informative. I appreciate the call for questions from this group. I participated in that, and I think having this greater transparency, this sort of this grid that you just went through, gives me a better idea of what's going on. I think that'll be appreciated by the public. A few things that I got enumerated here just off the top of my head, but it seems to me like at some point the board needs to take a step back and look at a framework type of project, and I hesitate to use that word framework because I really don't like it. I think it's overused a lot, but define what audit quality is and what does it mean to protect investors. So just that's one thought. And then two other things, being a member of the Treasury Committee and the report that was issued, a couple of the recommendations were to look at the whole audit report, the auditor's responsibility with respect to fraud, expanding that. considering. And then I know that the PCOB is following up on the fraud center, or as I'd like to call it, maybe the anti-fraud center. If you have a comment on where that stands, I think the group might benefit from knowing what the PCOB is intending to do with that. And then lastly, on this global standard number 8, what is the quality, global quality? I just wonder, the AICPA adopted Statement of Quality Control Standard number 7 well over a year ago. That went effective at the beginning of this year. That was for private companies. And I wonder whether or not that could be considered for adoption as sort of an interim standard, if this is going to take as long as what I'm seeing on this grid, because it addresses a lot of things like leadership responsibilities. We've had one of those discussions at a SAG meeting. What is the responsibility for national office people? And that is clarified in SQCS number 7. I think there's a lot of good things in that should be brought to bear almost immediately. So those are just a few thoughts off the top of my head.
Thank you for all those thoughts, and they're a lot of good ones. And before I comment on some of those points, and I will comment on them, I see a couple of other cards up, and let me try to take some other comments and see if they're similar, and I can combine my comments at one point in time. I think Joe Carcello is your card off. Joe?
Yeah, as it turns out, my comment does follow on what Galen said, and it relates to the recommendations of the Treasury Advisory Committee. And for the benefits of those who did not follow that group closely, and particularly for the benefits of the people here from the press, keep in mind that group was co-chaired by Arthur Levitt, one of the longest-serving SEC chairmen in history, and Don Nicolaysen, who was a former SEC chief accountant and a very senior partner at a Big Four firm. Had David Becker on it, who was the former head of Corp Fin at the SEC, Lynn Turner, who had a similar background to Nicolaysen, a former SEC chief accountant, a former senior partner at a Big Four firm, former CFO, investor people, Damon Silvers and Ann Yerger, Galen, representing both a regional accounting firm in NASBA, Barry Melanchon from the AICPA, Goldman Sachs had a representative, the Bank of America had a representative, CEO of a Big Four firm, Paul Volcker. The point I'm trying to make is this was an extremely qualified group and an extremely diverse group, and that it was well-balanced, in my opinion, between the corporate community, the accounting community, and the investor community. And one of their, in my opinion, more important recommendations, and this is dovetailing with what Galen said, is defining the indicators of audit quality. If you don't define that, how are you going to create standards that hold the profession to that? How are you going to inspect to hold the profession to that? How are you going to enforce to hold the profession to that? And we had, I thought, a very good discussion of that topic. And in looking at the disposition of the topics that we've discussed in this group over the last X number of years, Marty, I see in another handout that I guess you're going to talk about eventually that is listed here, and its status is not a current standard-setting project. So that's your answer, Galen. And I think in the interest of accountability and transparency, which the board talks about a lot for the accounting profession, I think about in the interest of accountability and transparency, when the board makes a decision, particularly on the recommendations that come out of that Treasury group, I think there should be an explanation given as to why the board is essentially rejecting the recommendation. I think the investing public deserves that.
Joe, thanks for those comments. Since anybody else have a comment on audit quality? Is it the recommendation of ACAP to define audit quality? Because if not, Arnold does. Arnold?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that on the agenda of the IAASB, we will embark on a project on audit quality as well. We've just begun that. Actually, next Monday, I will be speaking in London for the Audit Quality Forum on this subject. So it's a very beginning phase, but of course it's very important for all the reasons mentioned. And also related to that, on auditors' reports, we will hear in the board meeting in December outcome of a joint research project sponsored both by the IAASB and the AICPA by four academics on auditors' reports. So I would offer that indeed it's very important that we embark on these projects, and also that we, from the IAASB perspective, are doing our bit and are very willing to cooperate on these efforts.
Thanks, Arnold, for that input. Let me comment just briefly. There's a number of other cards up, but let me comment briefly on the subject of audit quality. I think, as many of you know, we did have a lengthy session with respect to audit quality indicators at a SAG meeting about a year ago, where we had a discussion group here at the meeting, and then we had breakout groups and discussed indicators of audit quality. That was a very valuable discussion, and as you note, that is on the topic that I'll be talking about in a few minutes about prior SAG discussions, but I'll drift into it now. We received significant input at that discussion and a lot of support for the importance of measuring and defining audit quality. On the other hand, we also, for virtually all audit quality indicators that we discussed at that meeting, there seemed to be as many potential negative unintended consequences for certain audit quality indicators as there were benefits. And we left the meeting with a feeling that this needed a lot more exploration and a lot more discussion. General agreement: identifying audit quality indicators, a good idea. What are the audit quality indicators? A lot more work yet to be done. And be careful to avoid unintended negative consequences. So with that, you're right, it's not a current standard setting priority, and we've set out current standard setting matters that we're working on right now. That's a pretty ambitious project and schedule, I think. Doesn't mean that we're ignoring it and we're not listening. There are a number. Arnold mentioned they have a project underway. IOSCO has a paper that they've published on the subject as well, where they've sought comment by December 1st on transparency and audit quality. We'll be monitoring that paper and those responses and be cognizant of what's discussed there. So there are a lot of parties that have looked into audit quality in the past and have all agreed that it's a great subject to pursue and let's define it, but have come up a little bit blank in terms of what the right answer is. We're continuing to listen to determine what other input comes along, what other inputs are there from others studying this that we might find to be of value. Some other comments Galen made that I'll get to in a minute, but before I do that, let me see. There's some other cards up. I think, Lynn, you've had your card up, so let me go to Lynn Turner.
Thanks, Marty, and I wish you the best of luck in this position. I'd like to build on Galen's and Joe's comments. There are a number of us around the table who were involved with the Treasury Committee report, as Joe mentioned. And it's now been a year, actually over a year, since the Treasury Committee report was issued. It was issued actually this week, about a year ago. And there were a number of things in that Treasury Committee that were recommended for the PCLB to work on. The audit report, and I commend you for taking a look at what you're already doing on signing the report. That's a good thing, but there was something in there about improving how auditors communicate to investors through that audit report that I think is extremely important. You've got audit committee communication on the agenda, which I think is an important part of that, but it certainly what we heard during those hearings that we held, and we held a number of them, was there needs to be better communication directly to investors through that audit report, and investors were certainly looking for that. There was the point on audit quality, which was mentioned. that was teed up by a retired Big Four audit partner who, if I recall right, might have actually been from your my former firm, Marty, that had some excellent ideas. And I, just because people say there's unintended consequences, that's probably the most overused phrase here in Washington, D.C. these days. It's always used when people don't want to do something or don't want to have something happen. They just automatically label everything as unintended consequences. And I'd be disappointed if the PCLB used that as a reason not to do something with that, not to further study, not to get into, and not to actually do something on that, because audit quality is obviously what we're all headed for. But there was also stuff in there on the fraud center. And one thing that I'm concerned about is I've heard that the SEC has grossly limited the budget of the PCLB to be able to develop that fraud center. And if that was true, I'd be very concerned about that. Seems like that would be a limiting move by the PCLB or by the SEC to protect investors, when in fact the Treasury Committee thought that was something that definitely needed to be done. There are also things in there on governance and improving the transparency of the accounting firms, and especially in light of what we've gone through in this country over a lack of transparency and a lack of regulators regulating the entities that they're responsible for overseeing, it seems highly unusual that in this environment to this day, quite frankly, this board doesn't get the financial information it needs to actually be able to oversee and regulate these firms. And I don't see those on the agenda, so I'd again just urge, as Galen and Joe have, that the board go back and take a serious look at that. And I don't see it on the agenda making list, which is quite extensive, and I'm not saying it's not good, because there are some very important things on there. There's a number of things on there that investors asked in a letter 5 years ago be done. It's kind of sad that we aren't 5 years down the road and aren't done, but understand what happened with SOX 404. But nonetheless, those are important things to be done. And with it not even being on the agenda, it does seem to be an outright rejection of the Treasury Committee report by this board.
Before I turn to a couple of other 10 cards that are up, with respect to the auditor's report, again, I'd say that we are paying attention to other activities that are going on with respect to that, as there's another IOSCO paper out with looking for comments by December 1st that deals with the issue about the audit report and whether or not it serves its purpose as a short form, current short form pass-fail kind of report, or whether the report should communicate other more detailed matters. And it's a pretty good paper that IOSCO's put out, and again, seeking comment by December 1st. So, again, while we're not working on that project right now, don't have it set for, as you indicated, for the very near term, we take your comments thoughtfully, and yours, Galen, who commented on that as well, and we're very cognizant of what others are doing in this area and paying attention to that, and including the comments that will come in connection with that IOSCO report. I think I'll comment on some of these other matters in a moment. Well, let me comment on the Fraud Center. With respect to the Fraud Center, the only thing I'll say is we are continuing to gather evidence with respect to what we might want to do with respect to that. I think that's a bit outside of the standards setting area, the Fraud Center, but I certainly am aware of the fact that participated in discussions where we're gathering evidence with respect to what would be the best way to address that recommendation. Ben Coleman.
Marty, I'm going to be moving to a different topic, so I just wanted to know, in other words, if you want to settle that first, back to your original recommendation, if there's anything, other points you want to make on the Treasury Committee, because I'm going to move on to a different topic.
Good. Thanks for deferring then for a moment. Jeff Mahoney?
Thank you. Just a question and then a comment. First, the question, I wonder if you can discuss how you use the results from the inspection process to develop the agenda. And then the comment, as you know, I sent you an email in response to your request, which was along the lines of the comments of Galen, Joe, and Lynn. And as I said in that email, and I would again respectfully request that the recommendations in the Treasury report that are directed at the PCOB that have been outlined, that they're either listed in the agenda somewhere with an estimate of your plan of addressing them, or, as Joe suggested, that you issue a public statement, or at least a statement to the SAG members, many of whom spent a lot of hours on that report, as to why you've decided not to address those recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment, Jeff. With respect to your question of inspections, that's an important aspect of our standard-setting process, where we learn from inspections, obviously, where they've noted deficiencies in auditing, and that can help inform our standard-setting agenda. And with respect to at least one or two items this morning I mentioned on the agenda, certainly with respect to fair value measurements, I commented that findings that with respect to some complex fair value measurements, we inspections noted lack of professional skepticism at times, and that informed our need to address fair value measurements further and additional guidance in that area. So we do take into account, whenever possible, inspections findings in informing our standard setting process. With that, Vin?
Okay, so let me just maybe change and go back to the standard setting and go up a level. But the first thing I want to do is, Marty, is really compliment you and thank you for soliciting the feedback. I've been on the SAG for 4 years. And a number of the items that you addressed will, I think, really improve the process. So I thank you for your opening comments with respect to listening to the input and changing some of the processes. Secondly, and maybe I've got really got 2 points. One is, you mentioned earlier in your comments with respect to being able to define why in a standard that you would issue that there would be a difference between that and maybe the other standard setting activities. And I think an item that has come up over the years, you know, if you use the analogy of, you know, where we're going on this long road with respect to IFRS and convergence on a global basis. Similarly, you know, many of us, if you really think about audit quality, Lynn Turner was just talking about our whole premise here is audit quality, and having audit quality on a global basis, educating our people, and the execution rather than standard setting, one of the important ways of doing that is to have common standards around the world that you educate the people in and they understand how to execute them. So I was wondering, going up a level as a strategy, should the starting place generally be the international standards, having influence over the international standard agenda, and then to the extent that we believe we need to have differences, AS5 is probably a wonderful example of that, that we have differences, but yet the starting place is a common platform, as opposed to having an agenda, a strategic agenda, that we believe that we need to continue to implement, that over time will be over an extended period of time, you're going to have just simply different standards. And I'm not sure that is healthy in the long-term audit quality in the execution. Secondly, I didn't hear anything, Marty, about when you're doing your activities, an item that's come up in the past is also an evaluation of the cost-benefit of a new standard. When you implement the standard, each of these standards have a cost and they have ramifications. And certainly the standards can be improved. They're going to constantly be improved, particularly as the world continues to change. That said, when the standard is input, it's an important element that it is, you know, the additional procedures are commensurate with the additional cost. And just not that you shouldn't do it, it's just there should be an awareness of what that is.
Uh, Thanks, Ben. First of all, thank you for your comments with respect to listening to the group and changing some operations, and hopefully that will improve processes going forward. I did mention with respect to AS7, certainly, that we looked at what other standard setters had done with respect to EQR and carefully laid out as an appendix in the release where we differed on the EQR standard and why. And we are committed to doing that going forward. I'll also say that we do work as a starting point in looking at where the ICEs are on a particular area as we're developing our standard setting process. So as we're marching forward on our standard setting agenda here with respect to the many topics in place, we're very, very cognizant of what has been done by the IAASB and existing international standards on auditing, as well as what's being done at the Auditing Standards Board. And we'll reflect on that carefully as we develop new standards. So that is part of our protocol, and we carefully think about what others have done and then think about why that's either appropriate for us or not as we go forward. So that is an important element of our process. Greg Jonas.
Marty, first let me echo the comments Ben Coleman made about the improvements in the process that you've made. I find this absolutely refreshing, and the openness and transparency and the organization, the clarity of what you're doing here, I think is excellent and a real step forward, so congratulations. Obviously, the most important thing in standard setting is deciding on what's important to work on. And I'm reflecting on this discussion and thinking of maybe a way to more formalize this group's input into that, I think, most critical question. And I'm reminded of the process that the FASB's advisory group, FASAC, goes through, which is fairly formal to gain FASAC input into what the priorities ought to be. And perhaps we should consider doing that with this group. Frankly, it's a pain to go through it because the members of this group, you know, would submit in writing their views about the priorities and why. The board would digest all that and then play it back to this group in terms of you know, actually put a slide up that shows this is what everybody thought on the priorities. Perhaps as a basis for that, we would have the following in front of us that would help us decide what we think your priorities ought to be. Your own good agenda that you've submitted here today. I like Vin's idea about the agendas of other standard setters. What are they working on? What do they think is important? What projects are in the wings, meaning things that the staff is doing research on and might bring to the board for an agenda decision? What the suggestions are of advisory groups, the audit advisory groups that several people have commented on today, and their good recommendations. CIFR, the SEC's advisory group, had a package of recommendations for the PCAOB as well. So, in other words, take inventory of all the waterfront of candidates, and then say, okay, SAG members, tell me what our top 10 priorities ought to be and why. And if you think that none of the inventory captures an important project that you think is critical, tell me that project too and put it in the ranking of 10. I just think that would put a discipline to the key agenda decision process and maybe do it on an annual cycle. I think that could provide you some valuable input in addition to the good process improvements you've announced here today.
Greg, thanks for those comments. And let me comment as follows with respect to the many excellent comments we've received this morning as part of this discussion. Laying out our standard setting agenda in this kind of detail with these kind of dates and putting all of that before you and then seeking your input on the standard setting agenda is very similar, Greg, to in a large degree to what you said. FASAC does it in one way in the sense of telling in advance your top 10 things you'd like to see on our agenda. Another way here is essentially saying to SAG members, here's what we're working on. what are we not working on that you think we should be working on? And I think we heard a number of things pretty loud and clear from a couple of you as to we think you should continue to, we didn't see on here anything with respect to the auditor's report, and we'd like to hear about why that is either on or not on and what you're thinking in going forward is. So certainly that's the purpose of this meeting, and that's the purpose of us seeking this kind of dialogue, and I appreciate that input, and certainly you should all feel that that input will be carefully considered by the staff as we come up with our recommendations to the board. One other comment, maybe before we have break, and there's one other 10th card up, and we'll get to that, and then we'll take a break. With respect to the comment, I guess it was part of yours, I'm lost a little track here, the comment on global quality controls and the use of the ASB's standard. Galen, that was your comment. I think there's two quality controls projects that we have on this agenda. One that I referred to in item number 8, which dealt with global quality control standards and really controls, if you will, over firms that operate with networks is really how that standard is potentially looking at, and some of what's in Appendix K today and maybe beyond Appendix K. The other standard that's of a quality control nature is application of number 4, Sarbanes-Oxley Act provision of failure to supervise. And supervision in the context there not only really goes to the supervision at an audit, but really that's going to supervision in a different respect of, if you will, areas of supervisory responsibility within a firm. Who's assigning, who assigns the engagement partner, who assigns the concurring partner on for a particular engagement, and what's the clarity of the lines of demarcation with respect to those assignments. So the application of looking at that quality control standard may get into many of the things that I think you were referring to. So thank you for your input, though, as well. We'll reflect on what other standard setters are doing. In addition, there's one more card up before we take a break and continue this discussion. Professor Cox.
I agree. I think we want to have, you were talking about agenda going forward and about the content of the auditor's report, but I really think what I heard going around the table was that we needed to have a thoughtful explication pretty soon about those items that were in the Treasury Advisory Report that appear to merit further thought and explications as well as to items that would appear not, and have that set for a discussion here rather than just sort of ignoring it. I think that we jeopardize the integrity or the public perception of the integrity of the PCAOB, and I think that that was a thoughtful report. The fact that it was released about a year ago, and that we haven't focused upon that in a systematic way in setting the agenda for discussions here and perhaps carrying on discussions within the PCAOB, I think is troubling, to say the least.
With that input, thank you for that. We'll take a break at this point in time, and we'll be back at 10:45. Thank you.